From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 8th day of December 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. We'll take a look at the cash grain side of the situation with Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Get an update on the RFS and how it will impact the biofuel situation across the United States with one of the foremost experts. I really do mean that. Scott Irwin here on the Urbana-Champaign campus, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois. We'll wrap up our time together with a discussion of the weather forecast. Who? Mike Tenor will be here from T-Storm Weather out of Chicago on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, and we're sponsored in part by you, our listeners. More on that in a moment.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're coming into the end of the year, and if you're looking for a charity to make a tax donation to WILL and our agricultural programming might be just the place to do that. If you do it right now, we've got some folks who have decided that they will put in another $2,500 to the kitty, so they'll match some funds, and you can get in your dollars on that matching fund as well. 217-244-9455. I think I gave you the wrong phone number if you were listening earlier, or willpledge.org. Either place will work just fine. Now, let's turn our attention to what's been happening in the marketplace. An interesting day in Chicago, and here to talk about it is Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
How you doing, Todd?
I am very, very good. So last week on Thursday, you told us we were ready for another leg up in the soybeans. We got one, but it stopped pretty quickly. Are we done, or do we have more?
Well, I think technically you have to be a little concerned because, I mean, we did get that push up early in the week, and it failed. You know, yesterday was kind of a steady type market, and then today it just kind of fell apart. So it kind of tells me, you know, technically that we've maybe done what we're going to do, at least for a few days anyway, and now we may go into more of a period of consolidation. The key factor here, I suppose it depends on what way you want to focus on, but I think the a dominant factor that kind of put pressure on commodities as a whole was the strength in the dollar. The dollar was sharply higher here today, and that generally just cast a negative tone on commodities. I think the other thing is the early week rally that we had actually started Friday, and then it continued on to Monday and Tuesday. We actually brought cash prices in central Illinois, I think, back to their fall highs or early winter highs, or the highest level that we've seen since we posted our harvest lows. So I have a sneaky feeling that generated some pretty good cash selling. So that kind of came into play also as a negative factor. Another one, December is always a real hard month to analyze because you have a lot of cross currents in it. You've got hedge fund rebalancing. You've got end of the year liquidation. You've got farmers are looking at to maybe move or sell some January sales and cash stuff. So you get a lot of cross currents. And then with the new administration and the outside forces going on, it's just going to make December a little tricky in here. But I don't think we want to use today's decline and say the party's totally over with. I think the key will be what kind of follow-through we get tomorrow and what we see early next week. But I'm more inclined to think that the sideways to higher trend that's been in place is going to stay in place. If it does anything on the negative side, it'll be more of a consolidation, more of a sideways type action as we approach the holiday season.
A downturn in the corn market. However, wheat futures managed to gain 4 to 5 cents in both the hard and the soft red winter wheat. Is that just the cool temperatures and lack of snowfall in parts of the hard red winter wheat growing regions?
Well, I think you could probably use that as a fundamental reason. I think a lot of it is maybe some spread unwinding. At least that would be my initial blush when I looked at the market, as people were peeling out of their short wheat, long corn, short wheat, long soybeans. So I think since wheat was able to hang on to some gains, I think you probably saw some unwinding of spreads that kind of gave wheat that boost today and probably accelerated the decline that we saw in corn and soybeans. I think it's more of a spread action. And that kind of goes back to where I said you get this end of the year position squaring. A lot of stuff happens because people like to, a lot of people kind of shut down trading after they get past, you know, December 10th, 15th, because then it gets into a real slow holiday type market. And I think that's what we're seeing going on right now.
Corn just a follower for the day?
I would say so. I know that they used the appointment of the Oklahoma Attorney General as maybe a negative influence because he's an oil guy. And that may create some headwinds to the ethanol industry. But I think that's a stretch. I really think the ethanol industry is in better footing than a lot of people think, because the oil companies are creating a lower octane fuel, and they use ethanol to raise the octane level. So I think ethanol demand is going to stay strong regardless of whoever's ahead of EPA. If anything, it would probably reduce our dependency on foreign oil if we could have more U.S. production oil. So I don't really see that as a negative influence on the corn market, but people talked about it today.
Anything that we ought to be watching for the next week that you're concerned about or that you've been keeping an eye on?
Well, a lot of my cyclical work, for what it's worth, maybe today was a bad omen for it, but my cyclical work indicated that we could maybe hold this thing together up until about the first day of winter, up into the 20th or 21st, and then we would start tilting down as we went into the end of the year. And, I mean, I was kind of looking at if people needed to make sales, that was what I was suggesting for people to kind of look toward, is around December 20th, give or take a few days, of pulling the trigger on some needed sales that one may be needed for income tax balancing or early year delivery for cash flow and that kind of stuff. So that's kind of one of the reasons why I don't think today was I don't think we did any damage today, but we sure didn't do any good. So I still think this thing has still got some more in it. We just may have to spend a day or two consolidating before we get that pop before Christmas.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Looking forward to being in Olney, Illinois by about 6 o'clock this evening for one of our Will Ag panels. Thanks to the folks at Country Financial and Illinois Farm Bureau and U of I Extension for sponsoring this one. 6 o'clock for the meal, about 6:30 as long as we arrive there on time. It'll be a pretty tight fit. We'll get started with our Will Ag panel, including Mike Zuzlo, who's coming in from Atchison, in Kansas. Kurt Kimmel and I and Gary Schnutke will all travel down together, and Wayne Nelson will be there too from L&M Commodities. That's tonight in Olney at the Holiday Restaurant starting at 6 o'clock. Yesterday, I was in Kansas City at the Van Trump Conference. It was a very insightful day. I suggest that next year you put this one on your list of things to do. Late in the day, I caught up with a tax specialist from Kayco Isom. Kevin Barely is from Denver, Colorado. He's been following the Trump administration's platform on tax reform as it relates to the estate tax. I asked him to explain it to me just a bit.
Well, I don't think that it's actually going to be one of his biggest priorities right away. I don't think it stimulates the economy, which is he's probably going to focus on. So I think you're going to see the estate taxes get put on a back burner for a little while. They'll probably raise it a few times, but whether the House will ever bring it to a floor and a vote may not happen in the first year. So I do think he's going to bring up the point that he wants to repeal it. He doesn't have the votes in the Senate to repeal it, but they can do some kind of a budget reconciliation, and that way they can put it in place to sunset eventually like they did under the Bush 43. So it just makes things more confusing for a while if they try to go down that road. I don't see it being a big priority right away, though, because he wants to stimulate the economy. Eliminating estate taxes does not stimulate the economy.
Will he replace that income in some other form?
He'll have to. The taxes will have to be made up in some other way, especially under the Reconciliation Act. Right now, his proposal is to repeal the estate tax, but to incorporate a capital gains tax on assets passing at death to your beneficiaries. Capital gains rates are less than estate taxes, but it's still a tax, yes.
My first thought on that one is I can always find a way around the estate tax. I can plan through that. Not potentially possible with a capital gains tax.
That's a great point. We know what the current estate tax laws are, and there's numerous loopholes, especially in the ag world, where if you're educated, you should not be paying estate tax. No educated farmer should be paying estate tax. There's that many loopholes in the system. We don't know what the statutes will say under a capital gains tax, and it could apply to the first dollar. Mr. Trump has certainly proposed having some kind of an exemption, and maybe even exemptions for small businesses or farmers, but nobody's drafted those statutes. We have no idea what they'd look like.
Kevin Barley is with CAICO ISIM. I caught up with him yesterday at the Van Trump Conference in Kansas City, Missouri. Let's turn our attention now to the RFS and the announcements made by the United States Environmental Protection Agency looking forward. The expert here on campus is Scott Irwin. He now joins us. Thanks, Scott, for being here. What can you tell me about the RFS announcement US EPA made and the impact it will have?
Well, they continue to give a push above that E10 blend wall in the standards, in the sense that those are continuing to be set a bit above the actual physical E10 blend wall.
Will this put a greater emphasis on higher blends of ethanol, in your opinion, like E10, 15, and maybe 85?
At least in theory, it does. But we've actually seen in recent years that those kinds of blends have not been growing very rapidly. They may further down the line, but I wouldn't expect large growth in the next year or two.
If that's not the case, how do they fill the gap in the mean space?
One word, biodiesel. And that's the real story coming out of the latest rulemaking by the EPA, is the big boost this more than likely gives biodiesel.
Why?
Well, because it's an advanced biofuel, which means that it's a basically higher ranked biofuel than corn-based ethanol because it gets a higher score in terms of reducing greenhouse gases. So it can do two things. It can be used to fulfill the advanced component of the standards, as well as the gap between the E10 blend wall and the ethanol mandate itself.
Do we have the production capacity to meet this requirement?
Yes, although that answer requires acknowledging the role that imports into the United States have played in the last couple of years. We've seen very heavy imports of both traditional biodiesel and renewable diesel, and those have been important in helping to fulfill that demand for biomass-based diesel, which is the technical name for that category.
So we have USDA's mandates, their numbers for renewable fuels. Now we need to know how many miles we're going to drive. What does that look like in the United States?
Right now, the outlook is basically back to the 1990s is maybe the best way to describe it. We're driving more and buying bigger vehicles, which is good news for particularly ethanol, because that in and of itself pushes out the E10 blend wall.
Do you have an opinion on how the Trump administration will deal with the RFS?
Very interesting questions. A lot of speculation swirling around those issues. On one hand, President-elect Trump has much of his, the fact that he was elected, it's based on his success in Midwestern states, where there's a lot of ethanol support. And on the other hand, he's clearly shown an interest in some of the arguments made by those coming out of the oil refining business about some of the perceived problems of the RFS. So it's difficult to know how this is all going to play out. My own personal guess, Jeff, is that you'll see probably a little less aggressive implementation of, in particular, the advance mandate going forward, but the rest of the RFS is unlikely to be touched, in my opinion.
The renewable fuel standard build-out runs through 2020. What do you think happens after that?
After 2022, the RFS continues, but the standards are then up to the EPA after a comprehensive review. And at that point, anything could happen between a big increase and potentially even a big decrease.
Scott Irwin is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can read his thoughts about the RFS online at the Farm Doc Daily website. In fact, Scott will be traveling next week along with myself and the rest of the agricultural economists on the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. Too late to sign up as a pre-registration for that, but you can still walk in at any of the events. We'll be in Champaign at the iHotel on Monday, and then we make our way around the rest of the state. You can find all those dates and times on our website at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report, Public Radio for the Farming World. Have you dialed in yet with your financial support? Hope so. 217-244-9455, willpledge.org. Don't wait. Do it right now. We're always looking for a big month in the month of December, and I bet you can help us out. 217-244-9455 or willpledge.org. I kind of like the $120 level. Now here's Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, to talk about the cash grain situation. Hey, Matt, do you suppose farmers managed to make any sales this week of new or old crop soybeans?
I think there was a few sales being made. You know, I talked to several producers that were either making sales or doing a little bit of risk management. You know, whenever we got into that 10:30 level more than once this week on November 17 beans, you know, I pointed out that we're pushing up on $1.50 above the spring insurance price for 16. And, you know, on 60 bushel beans, that's $90 an acre. So I just didn't think that was something we should ignore. And a lot of the guys I work with definitely made some sales and did some risk management.
Bin door still shut for corn, though.
I think for the most part, you know, there's not a whole lot moving at this point. You know, basis has improved some since, you know, the glut of harvest. And I think that producers are kind of hoping that they'll see that continue. And I think that it probably will after you get several bushels moved as soon as the calendar year changes. It'll be pretty tough to rally basis in January. But when you move past that, I think you can start to expect a little bit of basis appreciation. Again, plus there's carry in the market. So we definitely don't want to ignore that.
On the new crop soybeans, will there be another opportunity in that $10 range cash?
That's a good question, but I think the more overriding question for me for producers is, you know, can you make money at 980 and 990? And a lot of producers I work with input costs where they're at, can certainly make money at 980 and 990. And so it's not such a bad idea to go ahead and maybe ignore that $10 level and not get too hung up on it, because the fact of the matter is it may not get back there. I mean, I think it will. You probably have more than one chance, but if you don't, you'll be kicking yourself that you didn't sell at 990.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Yep. Thank you.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett with Bennett Consulting. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago to talk about the weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. Been traveling a lot this week. It looks like we will get some weather, but let's hold off on that just a bit. And we'll start in Argentina, where they have been suffering some dry conditions. What can you tell me about things there today?
Well, their corn crop has been very dry since about November 1st. If you take a look at some of the data that we have access to, you'll see that they're in the middle of their third driest period since 1980, going back to November 1st, and also the driest since the same period in 2007. Now, it is a little bit early to be concerned with Argentina corn and soybean crops, but we would argue this. The earliest planted corn, which includes about a third to maybe 40% of their total corn crop, was planted in October and into early November. That corn typically begins to pollinate about now and then for the next 2, 3, 4 weeks. So given the lack of rain that we've seen over the last 30 to 40 days, and with a dry forecast going forward, we do have some concerns that this crop will begin to pollinate under stressful conditions. The real question for everybody is what happens once we get beyond the next 10 days, because we have pretty high confidence that there is very little rainfall coming up for these areas through about next Friday. Once we get into the following weekend, that's where things get a little bit interesting, because there are some hints that a storm system will pass. Now, this system will more than likely produce a few thunderstorms in Argentina. That would take place next Sunday, which is December 18th. So the question is, will this turn into a major rain event? Will it be a minor event? Will it mark the start of a new pattern? Typically, when these types of situations unfold, what we see is that we'll get a couple of thunderstorms here and there, but it's unlikely to mark a true change to a new pattern, because we need to see one, two, three, four of these systems in a row to really mark a pattern change. We don't think that's the case, but that is what we'll be following, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that next Thursday as well.
Let's turn your attention to the northern Corn Belt, where snow has been piling up, cold air has been drifting lower, and we've got some here in our part of the world too. Looks like we'll have snow events eventually.
We think there will be some significant snowfall across a big chunk of the Corn Belt starting on Saturday and continuing all the way through Monday. One, two, or maybe even three storm systems are going to race along the Interstate 80 corridor, and each one of these has the potential to dump several inches of snow, with the big one being on Sunday night and into Monday. That's the way it looks today, but we do have some confidence that 3 to 6 inches of snow will affect the Interstate 80 corridor all the way from Iowa through Ohio and points on to the north, and a swath of snowfall from 6 to 12 inches cannot be ruled out from somewhere near the Iowa-Minnesota border through Chicagoland and then into northern Indiana. So we do have some weather on the way that will be of a bit of concern, especially for transportation. And also some of these livestock areas, they don't really want to see a big snowstorm because it's hard to move things around when that happens. But nonetheless, that's just kind of part one, because there's more after that, more than likely though, about 10 days from now. So a very active U.S. weather pattern is underway, and we do expect to see significant snows over the next 10 days.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great afternoon.
You too. Mike Tenura is with T-Storm Weather. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Yovai Extension's Todd Gleason.